The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. It is Wednesday, February 12th, and we are just scratching the surface of the NFL offseason. Taysom Hill news. We got some mailbags coming. There's no news about Taysom Hill, but we're going to talk about Taysom Hill today because it's like the hot thing in the NFL for some stupid reason. We are going to have mailbags. So I'm going to be out. I'm going to be gone on Thursday and Friday. We have pre-recorded mailbags with the Super Friends, AFC burning questions and NFC burning questions on Thursday and Friday. Make sure to check them out. If for some reason you want to leave a question for future mailbag answering or just for any answering, do so on Apple Podcasts. Leave a 5-star review. Any question will be answered. We also do Brady Quinn questions. We get a lot of those. Brady's like famous or something. And he's on the show today, which means it's a pow, 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 pow. Brady Quinn Football Show. What's
Hump
up?
Day? What's up, Will? Hump day?
Like the camel coming through the office?
Well, that's what some people think about. Question. Other people think about some other stuff going on there, Will.
Okay. Well, right. I mean, sure. That's how you end up with three kids, man.
Yeah.
Hump day!
Hump day! What up? Oh, man. So much to talk about. So much to talk about.
You do have a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about the XFL as well. I thought it was very enjoyable the first weekend of XFL. I won some money on DFS too.
Did you?
Yeah. We had Evan Silva breaking down the first week, last week's show. And if you listen to the show, you probably want some cash because he had like Dan Williams as a guy to target. And
can I tell you who's going to win MVP?
Yeah.
PJ Walker, quarterback for Houston. I'm just telling you right now, like he had a great preseason last year in Indy. And he possesses like all the skills and traits that are going to be needed in this league to be able to win. Cause I do think like you look at Matt McGloin, for example, for the New York Guardians, like he's a good player. I think he can distribute the football well. The problem is, you know, the offensive line play is going to break down and you're going to have to be athletic. And that's where like PJ Walker to me is going to be able to end up, you know, impacting games much more so with his legs and arm. But that is my early shot, early call to win MVP of the league.
Okay. And of course, we're talking about the Houston Roughnecks quarterback.
That's correct. Right. Yeah. They just got Pepper Johnson fired, who was the L.A. What's their mascot's name?
Wildcats.
Yeah. He just got Pepper Johnson, their defensive coordinator, fired. So,
you know, Pepper Johnson, widely considered the greatest defensive coordinator in L.A. Wildcats franchise history.
That is right, because he is the only defensive coordinator in the L.A. Wildcats history as of now.
Yeah. The if you had to pick one coach, so like I know you mentioned Walker,
right?
But if you pick like Bob Stoops and Hal Mummy, or would you rather go with June Jones and Chris Miller for XFL purposes?
Pep Hamilton would be who I would pick to want to play for. Just the dialogue, listening to him talk to Cardale Jones, and just how he handled even the media, because you know that's
more like your style, like that you played with, right? Like a pro style type of system.
Yeah, but it's also just I think how he coaches the quarterbacks and like how he coaches the players in the team. Like I love his demeanor. He's always kind of using everything as like a teaching moment, and I think that comes across well in the broadcast too, which is like one of the coolest things about the XFL outside of the rules, yes. And we can talk about that in a minute. Is the exposure. I mean, you're going up and talking to defensive backs. At one point, Jenny Taft was like on the sideline for the New York Guardians. She ran up to try to grab one of the safeties And there was like a sudden change and he had to run back out on the field. He like kind of murmured something to her, but that was about it. But it's just cool to be able to get that much like insight into what's happening in game in real time. Something that the NFL, I wonder if they would actually allow just because they're so guarded and they don't want any information getting out there because everyone's fearful it's going to be used against you. Meanwhile, we've got these coaches calling plays to a national audience and doesn't seem to be an issue with that.
You know, just to that point though, I think it is interesting, like Pep Hamilton, by virtue of taking this job and doing that, is gonna open himself up for potential NFL head coaching.
Big time.
Whereas like, he might like, you know, the guy who, you know, was a smart offensive mind who worked for like Jim Harbaugh and then was of course in Indianapolis and all these other places. You know, like you don't know about his personality as much if you didn't play for him or like work closely with him as a reporter for the team or something like that. And so like this is an opportunity for other coaches, for other owners. And especially I think in a time when we're lamenting the lack of minority hirings, there's a really good opportunity to show some personality on the sidelines.
This is going to be good for everyone. Everyone yep. involved. It's good for Pep Hamilton and any other coach that's trying to make a case for himself why he should either be a play caller or a head coach of the NFL. It's good for young coaches to cut their teeth who maybe have been quality control or a position group that are now getting the chance to call plays on one side. It's good for players, obviously, to get the reps and to get the film out there so they have a better shot of getting signed in the NFL. But also the officials, also the broadcast crews. I mean, Greg Olsen, who's called some games and been involved, I believe in the three-man booth in the past for Fox. Now he was yep. with Fox and Kevin Burkhardt as a two-man booth. So if he does decide to hang it up, you know, that's going to be his partner. He's going to get reps. He's going to be more prepared for the NFL season when that time comes than he would have been beforehand. And even for like the people behind the scenes, the directors, the producers, like these leagues are so good for all parties involved. It's why I hated the fact that the NFL got rid of the NFL Europe because it wasn't that costly of a venture. And I do think it helped to spread the game internationally. It's one of the reasons why there's a decent following there in London and they can host however many games it is a year now there. So I don't want this to sound like hyperbole. I do think this league's going to last. I think it felt different than the AAF, but similar in the sense of it's that down period where we need football. We love football. How many people watch? 2.5-3 million people for the first week?
I think it was like average 3 million a pop, which is
Incredible.
It was better than the top NBA game on ESPN.
We'll never bring in another professional sports league, okay, that doesn't involve football at this point because football is king. Football owns everything right now in America. Like, people can't get enough.
I know, but I mean, like, that's the point. It's like, we like football so much, we're willing to watch the XFL. And granted, it's new. I want to see how it does in the second week. Seattle, D.C. averaged 3.3 million viewers on Saturday. St. Louis, Dallas averaged 2.5 million viewers on Sunday. And that Seattle, D.C. game, which was an entertaining game, and the crowd was awesome, peaked at 4 million at the end of the game. I do think you'll see a little bit of a drop off in the second week, but
second week or like, for example, one of the games I've got to call, I think it was on FS2. I don't even think I have FS2. So I'm not exactly sure how that game's going to rate considering,
you know what?
I can't tell you where to find it.
Everybody has FS2 and they don't know it. It's in a weird spot in your cable package.
Is it?
I swear it's like 312 or something like that, like something really weird.
When we get done with this podcast, can you take me through a tutorial of how to find it? Because I have tried to tell my wife that at times. Because when I was calling games, sometimes if it was an FS1 game, it might start on FS2 or like Fox, you know, business channel before it transitions over. Like there's been times when you're in delays and stuff that happens. And she's like, yeah, I can't find it. I'm like, all right, well, we got to figure this out at some point.
It is channel 618 on DirecTV. So all like right. As far as possible from FS1 and CBS Sports Network and all the other channels like that. Time Warner, it's like right around the 400s, I think. This is from a Googling what channel is FS1 on. But yeah, it's hard to find. I'm excited to see. What game are you calling on FS2?
That might be the first one. I think I have Tampa Bay. It's like March 14th. So I haven't even really looked at it. You know, to be
you don't have an XFL game till March.
I don't have one till March. That's right. We've got a child who's going to be coming into the world here rather shortly. In fact, if you're listening to this podcast, the child will probably already be born by then.
This podcast is this is Wednesday, February 12th.
That's correct. And so February 12th, the baby will be coming out. If you know what I mean, it's a scheduled C-section. Not to give away too many details. So.
Today, so as people will be listening in the morning at some point today, make sure and tweet at Brady Quinn Is it at Brady underscore Quinn? Or at
Brady underscore Quinn. That's right. That I'm predicting the future. I'm predicting that I will have a child today. So when you're listening to this, we'll have a family of five.
Maybe wait until Brady posts about it. Okay. You know, that's the good thing when it comes to children. Family of five. So your oldest is four?
He's 3.5, not quite 4.
Oh my God. What
yeah.
are you doing?
I don't know. Everyone keeps asking me that. We'll have 3 under yeah. 4. It'll be absolute chaos. Fortunately, our oldest is out of diapers. Our youngest is actually kind of good at going to the potty, on the potty, not having the, but she can't communicate really well. So we don't necessarily know when that moment's going to happen. So, she's still in diapers.
Is this third girl?
We don't know. We do not know. So again, when you're listening to this, that's the one thing you will not know is what gender the child is.
Okay. You know what? We don't need to discuss about, like, I don't know. You want a boy, girl? What are you thinking?
I would say this. My experience with having two girls so far is I do not need to have a boy. I actually want a boy though for my wife because you can tell there's just that like father-daughter connection. And I think she feels like she's missing out on that a little bit. And my thing is like, I see like my older sister and brother-in-law. You know, they have three boys. They had a girl first and three boys, and it's chaos. My little sister.
Is that?
AJ, yeah.
AJ Hawks, yeah. AJ
yeah.
Hawks.
Between.
Little baby Hawks.
Yeah. Between Hendrix and veteran Axel, those guys, it's like a nonstop wrestling match every night before
bed. I'm sorry. You're going to have to give me AJ Hawks' children's names again?
That's right.
Hendrix,
They're all named after musical performers.
Vedder, Axel, and Hendrix. That is awesome.
Right. And their oldest is Lennon. So the oldest is a girl named Lennon, but obviously John Lennon, Jimi Hendrix, Eddie Vedder, and then Axel Rose.
Okay. I know this is a tangent that we're going off of. I don't care. I need more on this. Is your sister a big music fan, or was this like an AJ Hawk thing that he could, so like, I would want to get sports stuff into my kids' names, but my wife ain't having that. And plus, I got a junior with Robbie, so I'm perfectly fine with that. I got everything I needed. But I'm just curious, like, what the dynamic was there with your sister and AJ.
I think they were both big music fans. Probably not the biggest, but I think they're fans, and I think they wanted to name them unique names. So there's a mixture of, you know, the fandom in it, but also, like the middle names or family names, that sort of thing. So I think it's a combination of it. But yeah, I'm not quite sure who was the bigger music fan between the two. If I had to guess, I'd say it was AJ over Laura, but I could be wrong because my sister is talented from a musical standpoint. Like, she can play the piano. She was a good singer when she was young. She did all that kind of stuff. So I'm not exactly sure who kind of led the way there. I guess if I had to sit back and guess, I may actually say my older sister because she's very much a type A personality and tends to be kind of at the forefront of stuff of trying to make those decisions.
So that was sort of what I was getting at is typically speaking, the husband cannot just simply flex on 4 baby names and get what he wants.
Although they're right. Badass names. And that's why I feel like AJ definitely had a piece in that as opposed to Laura, because Laura wouldn't make them as badass of names as they are. So that's where I'm like, maybe it was more AJ.
I mean, yeah, Axel is, but like all 4 vocalists though, that's interesting too, right? Like Lennon was, you know, obviously sang, Hendrix was, you know, I mean, Axel, who I saw a couple weeks ago.
Well, if you're going to be in a band, you got to be the lead man. Come on. You got to have some stage presence and all that. Yeah.
Look, those are alpha names.
Big time.
That's kind of cool. What a fun fact. So back to the XFL. What do you think the NFL can learn from the XFL? Because I think there's a lot to be taken from. So we mentioned the interviews. I think one thing to me that stood out was the transparency in replay. And they didn't get everything right. But at least we saw behind the curtain. Like, it's nice to see what's going on and to see the thought process and to understand why or why not the replay process is flawed. I think the NFL could benefit big time from that.
They definitely could, although here is some of the criticism that I heard, and I do agree with this to a degree. It could take a while, though, to come to the conclusion. And so some people were like, oh, you could just put a shot clock on it, right? Make it 2 minutes, and that's all the replay official has to review it. Well, for starters, aren't we trying to get these calls right? And so if you're reviewing every single play to make sure you get them right, you got to pick. You can't be fast in one aspect and then not do a quality job in getting the call right. And the other thing is you're at the mercy of the networks who are producing this broadcast. So if they're having a harder time getting you the replay or getting you an angle, you know, that's out of their hands. It's out of their control. It's the TV network that you're partnering with. And so, for example, there was a play, and I do believe it was in the New York Guardians game, where there was a catch, fumble, and then it was returned for a touchdown, right? Mm-hmm. And the problem with that was, is that, you know, it was great. You got to see the transparency of, I believe his name was Robert Lou. He was talking about the process of the catch, which in the XFL, it's different than the NFL. It only has to be 1 foot. So he caught the football, took a step, and then started to spin and make a football move, or act common to football, or common to the game, is how Dean Blandino would explain it. And the ball came out. So they're reviewing that portion of it. Then they're like, oh, okay, now we have to go look at the return to see if it was a touchdown. So then that was like a separate process, and you're like, okay, this was cool for a minute, and now I'm like, all right, I'm kind of bored, kind of want to move on and see what happens after this. So that's the only concern with the transparency. It's great, but I think the amount of time, right, you've got a guy in a booth where you're really just shooting the back of his head, it's not going to be great television. So they've got to figure out a way of speeding up that process. The last thing I'll say is, if they do this in the NFL, if they implement it, they need to implement the same camera angles, or they just get the side and back of the guy's head. Because if he makes a controversial call and that changes the game or loses someone some money who's betting on this, you don't want the guy's face to be seen on TV. So that's going to be the biggest key, is making sure you keep the back of the head angle where it's just pointed at the screen that he's looking at.
How about the fact that, like, even ESPN's Twitter handles, and everybody was like, bro, this league is so sick, they watch film with Xbox controllers. It's like, that's what everybody watches film with. Like, right? You have a clicker, obviously, but, like, tons of teams and leagues and players used an Xbox controller to watch film, right?
Maybe some other players would use that. I always use what was just called the Cowboy, which is like the usual remote that you have, the little clicker. That's usually what I always use. So, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I do realize, like, that's a way of watching it, but, I'm trying to think of how they would end up downloading the film. Cause like, as players, you always had iPads. Usually back in the day, you're getting like discs, and then really we'd stay at the facility because you'd be able to run through film faster. And so what you do is, you'd buy a computer, you'd have them load up the film on that, then you'd go home, have your own cowboy, your own remote to run through it. That was always the fastest, most efficient way, but as technology improved, it really just went down to iPads.
I was heard, like, a lot of people would get, for draft stuff, people who worked at, like, NFL media and things, would get basically like a preloaded Xbox with everybody's, not, or like an Xbox or like a hard drive that you could plug into the TV, you know, but it was like an Xbox style controller that you could just fly around and watch all the different conferences and stuff like that. So maybe, I'm just saying, maybe it's a little similar. Anyway, kickoffs. Why is this not a thing? The NFL should have already made this change.
I mean, look, it's 1 week. And I think if we look at the early onset of it, we got more returns, right? I think 90% of the kicks or something like that were returned. So that's what's one of the biggest keys, is you're changing it, you're keeping it a safer play. You know, 10 guys are all lined up across from each other 5 yards apart. They can't move till the ball hits the ground or the ball is caught. You're penalizing the kicking team if they don't put the ball in a certain spot, which is huge, because it almost forces them to basically kick the football accurately and then to a spot where you get a return. My only issue with the setup is you're going to get a lot of sideline returns. And the reason being is there's not enough time for the blockers for the return team to be able to cross block and create seams in the middle. So you're basically going to get a guy catching and then running one side or the other. Now, I don't know if teams will get creative and start trying to do reverses or different things, or if they will try to implement some sort of cross blocks to create some sort of lane in the middle. But that's the only thing is like, it's great, we got a kickoff and we've got one that's safe and we're not getting guys hurt, but we're also getting guys who just basically angle and run towards the sidelines, and that's the end of it.
All right. That's a fair point. I'm trying to think of other stuff I liked. Oh, the extra point thing, I kind of dig, but I feel like that's the 3-point. Did anybody really try a 3-point extra pointer? I don't think the games ever got close enough.
I want to say there was at least one that I remember, because there was a team that scored, what game was it?
No, Debo says 0 3-pointers. 4 of 11.
I don't think they converted any. I think one team tried. I saw 0-0. That's the other thing is, good luck trying to find stats for this, by the way.
Dude, you can't find any stats.
Well, that's why I 100% remember watching one of the games, because it started off where it was a couple of field goals for the one team that showed, it might have been Tampa. And then who did Tampa play this past weekend?
Tampa played.
Was it the Guardians? I thought the Guardians tried for then a 3-point conversion. Or maybe it was a later game. I can't remember. And honestly, it felt like a blur trying to take it all in.
Did you watch every single game?
I tried to watch as much as I could. Because you know what I was really curious to see is how each network would handle the broadcast. Like, one thing that stood out with listening to the coaches and the players talk was like ESPN almost left, or ABC almost like left their mics open. And they had so many people down there for that Saturday game, the first game, that at one point I was like, I don't know who's talking at this point. Like, I don't know if that's the coach or because there's so many people talking. They're kind of talking over
like
each other.
It felt like a bowl game.
Right.
In the Bahamas or something. Right. Where it's just like loosey goosey, like everybody's in Hawaii. I mean, it's a cool atmosphere, but it didn't feel like a buttoned up broadcast per se.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, I'm biased, but I thought Fox handled it better than ESPN did, at least week one with that. I'm sure they'll clean things up moving forward, but. The 3-point conversion thing is interesting though, only because you see these games that look like they're out of hand and you're like, oh wait, actually it's only like still a two score game if they can score and get 2 3-point conversions after a couple scores. So I don't mind that element of it. But as far as the rules go, like I honestly think the kickoff thing is the biggest one that could get implemented at the NFL level. Maybe even potentially the onside kick, that 4th and 15 from your own 15. That's one too, that it's something to monitor. The 3-point conversion is interesting though, because I think over time I'll be curious to see what teams choose to do to see if it is worth the risk. Because my initial thought is when you get down really close, you know, it makes it easier for defenses to play coverages that are pass coverages, but allow the force players to be up there close to the line of scrimmage to stop the run. So they have the best of both worlds, right? And they don't have to worry about getting beat behind them because there's not much room. So it makes it actually easier on the defense in that respect, even though they're closer to scoring. And so for the offense, like if you're on the 10, you don't mind being on the 10 versus the 5. Like one of the toughest place to call plays, especially passing plays, is like 15 to the 10. Like you're in no man's land. So yeah. A lot of coordinators and play callers in the NFL would say that down distance, usually we just run the football because it's so weird and so awkward to call a play. Because let's say you're on like the 12. Some routes, you end up kind of breaking at the 12, right? A post or something like that. And usually those guys, those DBs are squatting on the goal line right at that break point. And so it becomes hard to get any sort of separation. So, you know, from that standpoint, I'm curious to see how many teams will be aggressive and take the shot for a 3-point, knowing that even though it gives you a little bit extra room, it is kind of hard to run different passing concepts.
Without getting into the nitty gritty of each game, unless you want to, Brady, I'm curious what you think about
Debo's saying, by the way, there was no 3-point conversion. So maybe I just heard that wrong.
That's all right. I mean, it's not your fault. So I'm looking at these DFS prices for these, like, you know, like daily fantasy where you have like a salary cap and you have to pick certain guys like Noah Spruce, who, Nelson Spruce, excuse me. Yeah. Not Noah Spence is the passer's run.
Right.
He had 15 targets, 11 catches, 103 yards, no touchdowns.
He'll be in New England next year, right?
What's that?
He'll be in New England next year as a slot somewhere.
Tall white guy. he's the most expensive receiver on DraftKings for week 2. Do you think that sort of stuff is like an overreaction?
100%.
Of course it is, but how much do you think week 1 tells us about who will be impactful in week 2 on the XFL level, if any?
Yeah, I don't think it will tell you much. I think as far as the teams that dominate, at least from a defensive standpoint, and really at the line of scrimmage more so, I think you'll continue to see that trend play out. I do think there's going to be value. And again, like looking at a guy like PJ Walker, you know, he tore up LA. They fired their
defensive coordinator. He's now the most expensive quarterback.
Right. And he should be. Like I said, I do think he's going to end up winning MVP. That cat's out of the bag. But for a guy like Nelson Spruce, I don't know who LA plays this upcoming weekend.
They get Dallas.
Yeah, so Bob Stoops, I can promise you, he's going to ensure that Nelson Spruce doesn't have a big game. And so they'll do all they can to give him the football, and the way the rules set up with the double forward pass and all the different things that they can do, especially with the pace of the game. He'll get some touches, but Bob Stoops is a defensive-minded guy. He's going to try to take away Spruce and see who else can beat them. So, by the way, that's the other thing I really like about the game, the pace of play. I do think it's – it forces the play callers to cut down the actual language and the verbiage they use, but also the pace of play. It makes it more engaging. It's a faster game, and I think it keeps your attention more.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I felt like the AAF when it came out last year, and again, like we thought it was a pretty good product, but it was like it didn't feel as quick, and it's like it has like an arena league style. I don't know how to explain it. It does feel like entertaining. Like even if you don't know these guys, like. You're seeing like enough, you know, like Cardell Jones is making the throws you need to see him make to entertain you visually. It's not like a slog out there, especially in week 1, although there wasn't a ton of scoring.
No.
In every single-
Which usually the defense is going to be ahead of the offense. And I will say this, there's more guys who are walking around the streets who are trying to get in the NFL who are fast and athletic and play defense than there are guys on offense, right, that are in that position. Because if you're fast and you can play, you're probably on a practice squad or in the NFL. Like, so we were privy to watching practice film in preparation for the XFL. So I've got practice film. I was looking through it, and my first thought was that. I was like, all right, I wonder how good the skill players are that the quarterback's going to be throwing to, because, you know, again, we see guys who sometimes come off the street as defensive back and they can get the job done. Whereas, you know, a wide receiver, it's a little bit more difficult, right, to understand an offense, learn an offense, route running and all that. The one common denominator is in one-on-ones, that's an offensive drill. Usually a quarterback and a wide receiver should absolutely torch every defensive back in one-on-one drills, okay, with the exception of, like, your all-time greats. Watching it, it was apparent that every group of wide receivers was having a hard time separating. And it's because they don't have that type of blazing speed that you see in the NFL, because those guys are priority there if they run a you know, sub 4.4 or 4.4, you know, something like that. So that was one thing that I think attributed a little bit to the fact that you're not getting a ton of separation. When you saw a touchdown pass or a big play, someone fell down, there's a blown coverage or like miscommunication. And that's just kind of what you're working with. Maybe that'll change in the future, but, you know, as it stands right now, I do think you're going to see the defense be ahead of these guys moving forward. And I think they're, you know, those defensive guys, you know, there'll probably be more defensive guys having a shot to play in the NFL, I think, than offensive guys, maybe outside of the quarterbacks and offensive linemen.
Again, sort of like spinning this just from a DFS angle, because like I find it like, I think this is and Evan mentioned this on last Friday's show. I just think it's fascinating. This is the AAF messed up here. They didn't have DraftKings or FanDuel, and like, to me, if you can incorporate that, like, it's not gambling, and they put the lines up on the screen. I love that. Like, oh, if somebody walks in,
yeah,
they're not like, hey, what's the line on this game? It's like, it's right there in front of you, pop.
Right.
You know, like that to me is good. And you know, everybody's gambling on it. I think the NFL will get there eventually, but it'll probably be a few years before they do. But so from what one thing I seem to notice was that it was really hard to run in the XFL. Like, I thought the running backs really looked like they had a hard time getting loose, and maybe that's just an offensive line, defensive line situation. But from like, if I'm building out a DFS roster, you get one quarterback, one running back, two wide receivers, and then two flexes. And
at least both wide receivers.
Yeah, four wide receivers.
Right.
Right. And it's point per reception too. So like, I'm just going to buy a cheap running back who might catch some passes and then load up on wide receivers. That's the play, right?
No, it's 100% the play. And I would, yeah, like to your point, I would lean towards a running back that can catch the football in the screen game. Because yeah, much like we see at the NFL level, if you, every single snap at the NFL, said, all right, this offensive line has to go against this defensive front one-on-one, right? The defense would win nine times out of 10, eight times out of 10, okay? These guys are bigger, stronger, faster, they're better athletes. And what happens is the NFL is kind of void of having these offensive linemen who are prepared at the NFL level. And so they're reaching, they're taking guys, they're trying to convert defensive linemen who didn't make it in the NFL as a defensive lineman into offensive linemen for that reason. So that same disparity you have in the NFL as far as finding like ready offensive linemen, it's the same thing you see in the XFL. The defensive line is better than the offensive line. So you're much better off from a daily fantasy standpoint, because it's going to be more of a passing league. I think teams are going to have a hard time running the football. And by the way, if you're a coach too and you're calling plays, don't you want to try to make a name for yourself? Maybe you can, you know, roll this into something else. So you got a quarterback, you can throw the football, utilize the skill players and the talent on the outside. I think that's the easiest way of scoring points. So I would take four wide receivers. I'd take the two flex as well as the two wide receivers you get, and find a running back who catches screens or catches the ball out of the backfield well.
The highest rushing yards per attempt in the XFL week one. By the way, RJ White put together a little handy stat. I can share this with you if you want. Tampa Bay averaged 5 yards per rush attempt, I believe.
Right, but you probably included Quentin Flowers, their quarterback, who mixed in with Aaron Murray in that game. So that, yep, you know, that skews it a little bit. But then moving forward, if Quentin takes over, which I do expect him to, they're probably going to be running the football more, at least the quarterback spot. Even though like it took a while to actually let him run the football in that game, which was interesting by Mark Trestman.
And then Dallas had 4.83 yards per attempt, but they only rushed the ball 13 or 12 times in that game. We saw Seattle with 4.6 yards per attempt, 21 rushes. And then St. Louis had 4.55 rushing yards per attempt, 42 rushes in that game. They're just, I mean, two teams had more than 30 rushes in each of their games. So, I mean, I think that is a good lesson that maybe you should not expect a ton of rushing yards in these games. So,
well, the last thing real quick, just philosophically, it's harder to teach proper blocking and how you're going to handle different fronts and all that. It's harder to install and run plays and do them effectively. And so if you're looking at these guys' game plans, I would imagine, this is just a guess, they're probably not overly complicated. It's a lot of zone blocking schemes. They probably have a couple gap blocking schemes in there mixed in as well. But for the most part, it's that. And it's a limited amount. And these coaches are probably saying, let's coach them up where they can block it no matter what the look is. And that, you know, we can run these well when we need to run it. But outside of that, it's easier to teach these guys, you know, pass blocking and install pass play than as a running play. So that also plays a part in any sort of like startup league or spring league.
All right. Wow. That's good stuff. Saturday, the Guardians at the Defenders. The Defenders are -5.5 and the over under is 49. Do you have any thoughts on that game or that spread? There's odds, of course, from William Hill, our brand new partner here at CBS Sports. Excited to work with old Billy.
How dope is that, man? One of the best in the biz. We get the opportunity to partner up and work with them. I love it. I love every bit of it. So opening thoughts on it, you know, I thought it was interesting because everyone was like, oh, you know, how close they were with the first game. I think the over-under set in like 52.5. We've never seen, you know, these teams play before. And I think they hit like 50 on the dot. Is that what the final score was? 31-19 in the first game?
And like it should have gone over, but then there was like some kind of crazy play near the goal line that ended up not being, like they didn't score. And so it was something XFL related that caused them not to score anyway.
Exactly. So, we gave them all the props in the world for that. And then you see like these other games where like they don't even come close to the over under like the rest of the weekend. Maybe with the exception of a couple. So
my DC Defenders are 5.5-point favorites over the New York Guardians in week two.
Yeah. So I actually like DC in that regard. I think I'd lay the points. And I also think this one hits the over. I do. I think this one hits the over. Now, the thing you got to be concerned with is the weather wasn't that bad last week in the Northeast, if you want to consider that. So my only hesitation is not knowing what the weather is this time of year, because again, we're talking about a spring league. And if you go back to the AAF, those teams typically played in like a little bit warmer weather spots. Like these teams will be playing outside in the elements. So that could play a factor. I think if you get some bad weather, then you're looking at potentially some sloppy football. So then I'd be looking at taking the under. So it depends on how that weather is going to impact the game.
Currently looking like it will be cold but nice on Saturday in Washington, D.C. This is, of course, a 5-day forecast. So don't take it as a guaranteed thing. The Tampa Bay Vipers, Mark Trestman, the passionate Mark Trestman, and the Tampa Bay Vipers head to Seattle to play. Oh, my God, Trestman Zorn?
That's right. A lot of West Coast there, man.
The sidelines.
A lot of West Coast there. Yeah. And the Vipers, it'll be interesting to see what they do at quarterback. I said a moment ago, you know, Aaron Murray didn't play great when Quentin came in. He really did provide a spark for them. So I would imagine he'll end up being the quarterback, and you'll see Mark Trestman utilize his ability to run the football more.
This is a slammer jammer under 48.
Tampa, yeah, I would take the under in this. I do think Tampa will be able to score some points with Flowers. If you actually looked at the Seattle team last week, they moved the football well. It's just they got down in the red zone and they had a hard time scoring, which again, when you get that down to that condensed portion of the field, you need a lot of reps, a lot of time to develop the chemistry and the timing that you need to, especially in the passing game. So we talked about earlier, if you're not going to run the football effectively, at least and not include the quarterback as part of that, it's going to be tough to then be able to, you know, get the football in the end zone unless you're getting big plays, which we didn't see much of that either. So, I would take the Vipers in that game, and I also think I'm with you. I think it hits the under.
And then finally, two games on Sunday: Renegades -3.5 at the Wildcats. I'm still getting used to which team. I need to say Dallas at LA, Dallas -3.5, and then Houston -7 at home against St. Louis, the Battle Hawks,
who can run the football a little bit. They actually try to run the football, and they will do that. Like I've said before, I love PJ Walker in this league. I think it's gonna, you know, steamroll into something else for them. So I'd lay the points on that one. I'd take the favorite, and I'd take the Roughnecks. I like Dallas to also cover their 3.5 spread versus LA. You just don't know what to expect, considering you just fired Pepper Johnson and Winston Moss will probably take over for this week unless we figure out more. Either way, you wonder if it's more of a scheme or a systematic issue, or if it's just more of a lack of personnel. I do think the Dallas team has enough to be able to get a win versus LA.
By the way, LA, less than 4 yards per play in their week one game. That's not, scored 17 points too. That's not good. So no. I think you're right. I think, I like Dallas and Houston in those spots as well. If you had to pick, would you take Houston right now to win the title?
I would. Yeah, that'd be the favorite. I think Houston and DC look like two of the best teams. New York's in that category as well. I think Dallas is probably somewhere in the fourth spot, probably next to Tampa Bay.
Those are the top three teams on there. Good job, Brady Quinn. Look at you. Old Brady, the gambler Quinn. He's no,
it's only 1 week, man. It's a crapshoot. We all could be dead wrong about this.
RJ White, 4-0 on his XFL picks. So check those out at sportsline.com/join. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Taysom Hill and his future as the franchise quarterback for the New Orleans Saints.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former sports center anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
So the last 48 hours on, or like the last 72 hours or whatever it was on Twitter and social media, and for whatever reason, I don't know who we blame for this. Maybe Mike Florio was the patient zero for this. I'm not sure. But there's been a lot of Taysom Hill talk. Taysom Hill himself said he wants to be a franchise quarterback. This is peak offseason stuff. I don't know if you saw my tweet about 30 for 30, about the 48 hours that we wasted our lives on talking about mountains into Taysom Hills. See, that's the name of the 30 for 30. It's a right. Hill joke.
No, I like it. Actually, that could be the title one day.
Yeah. Where do you stand on Taysom Hill as – like, do you buy the idea that if Drew Brees retires, the Saints are just going to be like, well, let's just go with Taysom Hill? Are you buying this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some truth there. I mean, for starters, he's restricted. He's a restricted free agent. So the Saints will obviously have the opportunity to keep him if they want, depending on the type of tenor they put him on and then depending on who would, you know, look at trying to acquire his services from him. So he's obviously going to be in the roster. We don't have to worry about whether or not he's going to retire and go in the broadcast booth like Drew Brees. And I do think Teddy Bridgewater, just from the conversation with him at Super Bowl, I think he fully expects to go somewhere else in free agency. I think he's done kind of being the third guy in the room and wants his opportunity. So I think he's moving on. So for that reason, Taysom will definitely be there. It's really down to what, in what capacity. Whether or not he can be a franchise quarterback, I think is an interesting question. Because Sean Payton thinks he can, because he sees him this small sample size and he sees the effectiveness of it. The problem is such a small sample size. And we act like he wasn't a quarterback prospect back when he came out from BYU. Like, he was 26 years old when he entered the league. He had been through a bunch of injuries, which is one of the reasons why he was there for such a long period of time, outside of the fact that it's BYU, you know, you take your missions, et cetera. So that plays a factor as well. But, like, he played as a quarterback at BYU, very similar to how they use him as a quarterback in Sean Payton's system. And he got injured. He got hurt. And so what's to think that at, what, 30 this year, he's not going to be subjected to those same injuries if you put that on a bigger scale and on a longer season at a higher level? So that's my concern. Is the first is injury, and then the other is I don't necessarily know that he can play from the pocket anywhere close to the degree that Drew Brees does, or even a franchise quarterback for that matter.
I mean, no, Drew Brees is a first ballot slam dunk Hall of Fame quarterback. back.
And he was, like, what, 3 of 6 last year? I mean, so we're all of a sudden we're anointing him.
13 career passing attempts. What? Yeah. It's insane.
Somewhere Michael Thomas is saying to himself, please God, no, let Drew Brees come back at least for another year. Because he's going to be impacted the most by all this if Taysom Hill did take over. His yards per reception might go up. He might be like a wide receiver for Navy, but his targets and his receptions are going to go way down. Yeah, I'm not buying into it, though. Like, I think the Saints will do what they can to keep him because he is versatile. He's a changeup. But I think if, like, Sean Payton's doing this to, like, prove he can win with a prototypical pocket passer and a guy who's athletic and showcase his ability to install an offense that's similar to Baltimore and kind of take the league by storm, it'd be a mistake. And if they do go that route, they do need to backload the second and third string QBs as being athletic guys, or they need to have a guy who's going to be more of a pocket passer that's just an insurance policy so they can, you know, actually get through games with whoever would be the backup and not subject them to more injuries.
Let me ask you this, and we you know, semi-spoiler, but we touched on a little bit on Friday's show, which has already been pre-recorded because it's mailbag. But we were sort of talking about, like, if Drew Brees retires, everybody's like, well, they're just going to go with Taysom Hill. Wouldn't you, as a free agent quarterback, if you're Tom Brady or Philip Rivers or maybe even Cam Newton or Andy Dalton, who aren't free agents, or Marcus Mariota, like, wouldn't you be like, man, the one place I really want to go now is New Orleans?
It would definitely be at the top of the list. And I think that's why, as New Orleans tries to figure out, like, what they want to do, I need to even think with the Dallas Cowboys, if they're frustrated with the Dak Prescott negotiations, like, dude, you're Dallas. Like, you should be able to talk to Tom Brady or talk to Philip Rivers and see what they're willing to play for the next 2 years for. And maybe you draft the guy that replaces, you know, them after the 2 or 3 years, whatever ends up being between those two guys. Like, it's worth the conversation, you know, and if you don't want to, you know,
have Dak Prescott or Tom Brady?
Tom Brady. And I think Tom Brady, I would. I really would. Now, look, all that being said, that's because he's the greatest of all time. Jerry Jones is what, 78?
Jerry Jones has made it abundantly clear that he understands how short his time on this earth is, at least as it relates to being able to win a Super Bowl.
Right. Like, and so if that's the case and you had the chance to get Tom Brady and you can pay him a good amount, but less than what you're going to be paying Dak for the next 2 years, you might contemplate that. Like, you might say, well, all right, like, I can build out around our team and we've got the pieces in place to let us be a Super Bowl contending potential team, right? So, you know, that's something that you should at least kick the tires on. You should at least explore. I'm not advocating for them to do that. I think Dak's their guy. I think, you know, he might play under the tag this year, but they'll eventually work out a long-term deal. I'm just saying, like, every team should try to see if they can upgrade at every single position. That's how you try to win a Super Bowl. That's how you try to be the best you can be.
I mean, look, Tom Brady didn't carry the Patriots offense this year, but he also had a bad offensive line relative to what New England's had. And he had horrible skill position guys, like the worst that he's had since 2006, really. So to me, it's not a stretch to say that he could go to Dallas behind that offensive line with that run game, with Mike McCarthy pulling the triggers and Kellen Moore there as well.
But that's the thing. So that's the wild card to this all is Kellen Moore supposedly is calling plays, right? I mean, Kellen Moore leveraged the fact that he was desired. He could have went back to Washington at the college level and been a play caller. Plays?
I think McCarthy's going to call plays, but Kellen Moore's the OC.
I think it's the other way around. I mean, I think Kellen Moore is the OC and is going to call plays. You can look that up, but I think that's what the agreement they came upon, which I thought was odd, like, to be quite honest with you. But
you're right.
So I do think that's a point of leverage where Kellen Moore might have said to Mike or Jerry Jones or whoever makes that decision ultimately, hey, I'll stay, but you got to let me continue to keep calling plays. And if you're Tom Brady, are you signing up for that? Like, even Philip Rivers for that matter, are you signing up for that? So it is interesting to think, like, where that comes up in the whole conversation. Like, the roster looks great. It's Dallas. There's no state income tax. You know, they could pay him a lot, but would he want Kellen Moore to be the play caller for him? Or would he say, yeah, maybe we need to make it Mike McCarthy, who's actually calling the plays.
It's a great point, and it makes you sort of wonder when you think about how that whole negotiation went down. And Kellen Moore's like, "Hey, I want to call plays," and Mike McCarthy's like, "Well, listen, I gave up play calling once, and I almost got in trouble for it, so I said I'd never do it again." And then Jerry Jones is like, "Well, listen here, Mike, what we're going to do is Kellen's going to call plays," and Mike's like, "Well, Jerry, I'm really thinking." He's like, "No, Kellen's going to call plays."
Is this actually Do you think there's a chance this is actually like during the pillow talk when they had the sleepover? Do you think they got it then?
I don't know if you saw. I don't know if you. Well, you probably didn't.
Maybe
know.
Mike was like falling asleep.
Let me see if I can find this email. We got a shout out. The most popular episode, I believe, in January, all of January, was our Mike McCarthy sleepover episode where you and I broke down. You, me, and Ryan broke down what we thought Mike McCarthy and Jerry Jones did.
But do you think maybe that was like the game, like Jerry and Mike, and they're talking, but then like Mike starts to fall asleep and Jerry notices and he's like, oh, hey, by the way, Kalen's going to call the plays. What did you say, sure. Jerry? Oh, no. Sleep tight, young fella.
Or like, it's like when I forget to like add something to like our family calendar and I'm like, oh, crap, I'm going to get in trouble for not adding this. So I wait until my wife goes to sleep and then add it to the calendar, like go find her phone and like clear out the alert and be like, it's been on the calendar the whole time.
Oh, come on. Dude. My wife has like literally told me like, oh, we might need to buy this and this. And I'm like, I don't recall any of that. She's like, oh, yeah, you might have fallen asleep. I'm like, that doesn't give you the right to go out and buy whatever you want then.
Right. Yeah.
Just because so I didn't object to it.
Yeah. Just because she was like, well, you were like, I put some like, what's the stuff in Turkey?
Tryptophan?
Tryptophan. She's like, yeah. She like dumped some tryptophan in your drink at night. You pass out and she's like, hey, Brady, I'm just going to buy this new necklace. If you don't want me to speak up or else I'm going to get it. And you're like,
exactly. I fall asleep. I've actually been tracking my sleep lately. I will fall asleep somewhere in the ballpark of 6 to 9 minutes.
Like, that's how long. Nice. Yeah. That's a short, nice time period for you.
I know. I fall right asleep.
So by the time you get in bed, 6 to 9 minutes?
Yeah, dude. Like as soon as I turn on the little tracker and kind of roll over, lights are out, six to nine minutes.
Is it like just a Fitbit?
I think it's through my phone, but I think it's an app called like Pillow. It's actually pretty good. Although I'm too cheap to pay for like the legit version where it like does all this other stuff and gives you all these other readings. So I basically just
NFL quarterback, you won't buy the premium.
Oh, dude, I still have the free version of Pandora. Like I will not pay just to skip the commercials. I'm like, I grew up with the radio. I will gladly listen to radio advertisements, even if they do happen to be things that I was just talking about because my phone's listening to me.
Yeah, it's like, hey there, fellow non-sleeper, check out Pillow for your, you know, it's like.
We mean, like, one of my buddies, I think I were talking about boner pills one time, and all of a sudden we had it on, and we're like just kind of talking about like at what age do you really feel like it's necessary to get those, and like what are you willing to sacrifice for you to take a boner pill? And then next thing you know, there's an advertisement that comes on. I look at them. I'm like, they are listening. They are listening. They're targeting us with their boner pill ads.
In defense of the boner pill ads that you speak of, those things are on like 24/7.
Yeah, that is true. I didn't want to necessarily bring that up because I feel like they come on quite often. But then I thought, like, am I talking about boner pills all the time, or is this just part of the advertisement?
I hadn't even considered that it's just a targeted assault on me. Like, it's like just, hey, buddy.
They know who Will is. They're like, hey, we know you, Will, and you need boner pills.
It's like, hey, get Roman. You're losing. It's like, I'm not losing my hair. I don't need boner pills. Get out of here.
Seriously, they've had such a strong campaign lately. I'm like questioning if I even need them at this point. And granted, by the time you're listening to this podcast, I will have a third child, 3 under 4. I can promise you, I do not need those. But they've advertised them so much, I'm like, maybe I do. Maybe I could be more potent.
I thought the 3 children under 4 thing was going to be, maybe I do need the hair issue with the Get Roman. Like, maybe my hair is going to start falling out because I have so many young kids. No, it was, in fact, Brady pointing out that he doesn't need the little blue pills.
No, but again, like, they've got me questioning, like, could I be more potent? Like, is there a chance that, like, maybe I'm not as potent as I need to be? I don't know. That's the thing. It's like, I'm now questioning that because of these Get Roman advertisements and every other boner pill that's out there.
But that's more potent. What do you think? Superman needs like stronger flying powers?
I don't know. Next thing you know, there might be a kid coming out from my shower drain or something. You have no idea.
He was like, please, please, please get out of this podcast. Please get I guess we talked about Dak Prescott already. You got everything? Okay, cool. Just keep talking about boner pills.
No, I was just saying the quick thing about Dak, it's like people are frustrated. It's like, oh, we already turned down $33 million before this past season. You know, what do you think he's aiming towards? I'm like, well, he wants to surpass Russell Wilson's 35 average annual salary.
Let me ask you this. Do you think he wants that or do you think his agents want that?
I think both do. I mean, obviously an agent is tied to, you know, their player, and the more, you know, money they make their player, the more money they make. But I also think that there's this philosophy that the next guy up is a franchise quarterback, if that's what Dallas thinks he is, he should make that money. Like he should surpass Russell Wilson. There's that idea. The hard thing becomes where, what happens if Patrick Mahomes is the next? And what happens if his deal is like an average annual salary of $38 million per year, which I do think it'll be 40, at least in new money. But, you know, is Dak Prescott going to get paid more than Patrick Mahomes? I think all of us would say Patrick Mahomes is a better quarterback, but Dak Prescott's the next guy up. So bottom line is he's going to sign a deal that is going to try to surpass that. And that's just how economics work within the, you know, contracts in the NFL. Like Derrick Henry is going to try to surpass Zeke Elliott's running back, you know, deal. You know, that's what he's aiming towards. Should he? I don't know. That's up for debate, but that's what every single player that hits free agency or has the chance to is trying to do. They're trying to set the market at their position.
Right. And, like, I don't think – nobody thinks Dak is actually better than Patrick Mahomes. But if the Cowboys want to wait out Patrick Mahomes signing a contract, then you're running the risk that Dak Prescott, who is an unrestricted free agent, is going to get franchise tagged, could eventually leave. I feel like – and I said – again, I'll say this on Friday's podcast because we already recorded it, so not to double down on my take here. I just felt like – I've just sitting with him for a little bit. You got the sense that he's sort of tired of all this, and he would love to just sign a contract – that pays him somewhere in the range of $33 to $35 million a year, that makes him the Dallas Cowboys quarterback for the next 5 years, that allows him to stop answering these questions and worrying about this stuff and to just have security at that with that franchise in that job and the scrutiny that comes with it for the next 5 years. I just feel like that's sort of where his head's at, but that's a very surface-level read for me on him.
It is, but it's also something that, like, and I can really only relate this because my, you know, I signed a first-round contract when I got drafted. And we hadn't agreed upon terms. Again, not a holdout. A holdout's when you're actually under contract. You decide not to show up. That wasn't the case.
I'm glad that the Brady Quinn football show allowed you to finally, after 10 years after the fact, 12 years after the fact, clear the air and get back at that nasty AP reporter who called it a holdout just to get some dirt from the, just to get to do a
favor. Hey, was that AP reporter you, Will?
Do you think I was writing about your signing rookie deal?
No, but so here's the thing. When you're a player and you're in that position, and the crazy thing is, like, it's human nature. We're like, oh, I'd never do that if I was in their shoes. Like, yeah, you would, dude. Yeah, you would. You would try to do all you can to ensure that the person you hired to give you the best possible advice would give you the best possible contract, because you don't know when the next one's coming and you don't know if it ever is going to. So that's why, like, as much as it may stink for him to have to talk about it over and over and over again, this is his second deal. Remember, he was a fourth round draft pick. So it's not like he got a ton of money off that pick. He got paid $2 million last year. So even though he's making marketing money, like, this is the next chance for him to make real money. And so for that reason, it might be a pain. I'm sure his agent is saying, look, we need to base, you know, our contract off of the next 2 or 3 years of you getting franchise tagged. And if their numbers, if that's not the floor for their numbers, at least the first 3 years of this deal, then we can't agree to a contract with them because it doesn't make sense for us, because using the instruments that are currently in place, like, they should be abiding by, you know, that deal, right? Franchise tag this year around north of $27 million, a second year, which, you know, what, 20% on top of that. And then moving on to a third year, like, that's usually how, you know, these agents will approach these teams and say, this franchise tag that you guys implemented, this is what you wanted. So this is how we're going to use it. These are the floors for the negotiation. Tell us why we should want any less than this.
So, let's see. Wow. So, Joe, while you were giving that great analysis, I dug into who the people were that wrote about your holdout. Joe Melissa, who is now no longer in the media. He's the director of PR at some, communications at some place in Cleveland, but he's still there. And then there's an article here. Browns growing impatient as Brady Quinn contract holdout drags on. That's Tom Withers, who's still a reporter for the AP.
The interesting thing was, and then this is like behind the scenes, it's hard to get a deal done when they, like, don't answer your calls. That's one of the tactics that, like, teams will take, where they'll try to wait you out. They won't talk to you for a couple of days, and they'll see if you'll fold. And one of the things that we knew going into that was, you know, Braylon Edwards, Kellen Winslow, guys who were drafted before me, those guys had also missed some time. In fact, like, I had a sheet that showed me, like, all the players who had held out for how many days and all that. So I knew exactly where I was in comparison with anyone else. And the other thing that like no one made public or reported was talking to Phil Savage, talking to Romeo Cannell, they wanted me to sit my first year. We had talked about that, like wanting to bring me along in the process. And so, you know, there wasn't necessarily a great sense of urgency, even though I wanted to go in and practice and play. There wasn't a great sense of urgency to get in there and do it right away because, you know, there wasn't the desire, I think, on the team's standpoint. I mean, you know, so long story short, that's the tough part about these negotiations is, you know, usually the teams will kind of have their people to talk about the narrative or kind of create a narrative. But the truth is always somewhere in the middle. And that's why it's harder from the player standpoint because, you know, you don't want to say too much to bite the hand that feeds you. But at the same time, you obviously want to get in there and play and do what you do. Which, by the way, I didn't miss a preseason game. I did get there, I want to say, maybe a couple of days before the first preseason game. So people act like it was like such a long holdout. Like Jamarcus Russell, I think, like held out before the first week of the season or however far it went. Like I was like, it paled in comparison to what he was doing.
It's such an unfair situation and not, I just think it's a, I think it's fascinating to think about it from like 2000, cause this is 2007, right?
Right.
I mean, this is before, like in 2007, there was some non-traditional wire media out there, but by and large, you were just dealing with the Associated Press and stuff was just distributed from like, and local newspapers. And so like the teams had so much control over the message that's being sent out there and it gets framed as a holdout because they frame it wisely and it gets, and you're a 22, 23 year old or 21 year old kid or however old you were. And like you're sort of boxed into the position. I don't know. I just think it's interesting now that the player, while the new CBA didn't give much power, the change in the media landscape gives you much more power in terms of what you can say about your message and what you're doing as a young player.
Well, and now you have Twitter, right? I mean,
exactly.
I could have literally just put out statement after statement. And back then, like it was, you know, kind of wrong or, you know, agents would tell you just no, just keep quiet or keep training, keep working out, keep doing what you're doing to prepare yourself. And nowadays, I mean, like, it's entirely
in this
different.
Article, there's a bunch of quotes from Phil Savage and Romeo Cannell. And they're laced with, I mean, like, they're not like being jerks, but they're laced with the standard stuff you would say, like, guy isn't here. And it's like, Condon could not be reached for comment. You know what I mean? Like, cause he's like, we're not going to comment on this. We're going to just keep grinding on the thing.
Right.
And you're a quarterback drafted in the first round before the old CBA. You're going to get as much money as you can. That's your job. That's your
Well, because it was all negotiable, right? To a degree. I mean, nowadays it's completely different. I mean, that's why a lot of these agencies, you know, they took 3% back then. Now they're saying, hey, I'll do it for 1% or I'll do your rookie deal for free as long as you sign with us for marketing. And then we'll, you know, we'll work on that second deal afterwards. So that has even changed, you know, and it's one of the reasons why there's really not much to negotiate, right? It's signing bonus, and timing of that when you receive that money and then offset language. Those are the only two things that you really negotiate now.
And even the offset language is like, what, I mean, like, what are we holding out for here? If this guy doesn't make it 4 freaking years on your team, then that's on you, not him, for finding another job somewhere else.
Right.
Anyway, good contract talk, good holdout, good contract negotiation talk. Sorry, I didn't mean to use the H word.
Doesn't bother me.
I know. I just think it's a fascinating subject. Brady Quinn Football Show, always fun. Make sure and check out our 2-part mailbag, AFC Burning Questions on Thursday plus mailbag, NFC Burning Questions plus mailbag part 2 on Friday with the Super Friends. Brady Quinn, talk to you soon, buddy. Sounds good.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.